It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Coming up on episode number 127 of Sports Day Plus. At 6:45, where are we at in society? There's good naked and bad naked. And unfortunately, I have a jarring example of bad naked that I need to tell you about. At 6:15, it is the first of a two-segment chat with Phil Rosenthal of Somebody Feed Phil ahead of his appearances at ATX Television Fest this weekend. And a mere seconds, looking back on some highlights from this week's SEC meetings. That includes comments from Steve Sarkisian and Chris Del Conte, as well as another sign that Greg Sankey doesn't really care about his student-athletes. I am your host, Trey Elling. You can give me a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave, and do the same for ESPN Austin at 1027 ESPN. I hope you continue to have a good week in the ATX as I broadcast a couple more shows from the Windy City. That's right, hanging out in Chicago with my family this week, full of, I say sunshine, there has been some rain, but mostly full of temperatures that top out in the upper 60s or low 70s. Today was a beautiful one here in Chicago, and I hope that you're not too hot in Austin right now, as you're likely driving home from work. I will be back to suffer with you here in just a couple of days. Just like you, though, I have been paying attention to what's been going on at SEC meetings out east this week, which is the first time that Texas brass has had a chance to participate in the conversations being had over the course of a week in the Florida Panhandle. And we're going to start here with a couple of Longhorn football comments from two guys who are extremely important in making the football side and really the sports side work, if you're talking about Chris Del Conte. Let's start with Steve Sarkisian talking about one of the biggest reasons why he's excited to join the SEC, and that has to do with the resumption of a couple of rivalries.
I'm excited. I've been part of some great rivalries in college football. And I know there was so much talk about realignment, and I know realignment looks different for every school. But for us, we gained two rivals back, right? We're playing Arkansas again, which is great for Texas Longhorn and Longhorn Nation. We get A&M back. And so the game with A&M, you're talking about houses divided. You're talking about decades of tremendous games and Thanksgiving weekend. And so to get that game back, I know we're looking forward to it. I'm sure A&M is too. I've got a ton of respect for Coach Elko. We competed against one another when he was a defensive coordinator at A&M and I was an offensive coordinator at Alabama. He's got really good scheme, really good players, and I think he's going to do a really good job there.
I don't want to diminish the Arkansas game, but the rivalry resumption talk certainly begins with Texas A&M. A long-standing rivalry before the Aggies moved to the SEC a little bit more than a decade ago. And despite the fact, or maybe because, there was so much ill will on each side, especially coming from the A&M side of things, to get these games going on the field again, specifically in football, because I realize that we've had examples from other sports, and credit to guys like Augie Garrido for making sure that A&M game was happening pretty quickly after these two teams were no longer in the same conference. To get this game back on the football field, though, is enormous, not just for the rivalry, but for football fans across the state of Texas, and let's be honest, across the country as well. You're about to hear Chris Del Conte talk about what he considers to be the greatest rivalry in college football. And Texas OU, I agree, is that there are a number of great rivalries in the SEC, and now you can put A&M and Texas squarely in that mix as well. That's not to sleep on Arkansas, though. You should never sleep on Arkansas, as we've found out far too often over the last decade or so. That ugly Texas Bowl game where Texas had something like 59 yards of total offense, Brett Bielema embarrassed that Charlie Strong-led Longhorn team. Even Steve Sarkisian has felt the wrath of that Arkansas rivalry. Remember his first year going into Fayetteville? Us thinking like we had a pretty good chance there and just getting absolutely worked. Just awful run fits. KJ Jefferson, the rest of those Arkansas running backs and receivers just running wild on Texas that night. That was concerning. I won't call it a red flag, especially with what has happened since then, but that was an ugly moment early on in the Steve Sarkisian tenure. That's why you give guys a couple of years to really get things figured out and to get the ship righted. And we as Longhorn fans feel like things are going in a great direction now heading into year one of the SEC. But both those rivalries are important. By the way, that makes it more difficult for Texas each and every year if they're going to be playing those two schools to go along with that Oklahoma game in Dallas. And speaking of, Chris Del Conte was on the Paul Feinbaum show yesterday, and he had a little bit to say about where Texas OU ranks amongst some of the other great rivalries in the Southeastern Conference.
You may talk about the cocktail part of the Iron Bowl. Have you been to the Red River Rivalry yet?
At the beginning of my career, I saw it.
It's ridiculous. It's the greatest thing ever. You may talk about the cocktail part of the Iron Bowl. It is nothing
I think
at the state fair. Because you have 300,000 people.
I detected something there.
300,000 people outside. No, the Iron Bowl is awesome. Don't get me wrong. At night, it's great. Same with the cocktail party. But this game, nuts, too.
I love CDC mixing it up there with Feinbaum. And by the way, I didn't play this part, but CDC referenced the Iron Bowl and the world's largest outdoor cocktail party. Did you know, much like with the Red River Shootout, I guess, because you did hear Chris Del Conte stumble through Red River Rivalry like we all do. That's too many R's in a row. But did you know that we're not allowed to call it the cocktail party anymore? Georgia, Florida, yeah. It goes by a different name now. I don't give a damn. Just like the Red River Shootout, maybe the Sears Tower here in Chicago, where I'm speaking with you from right now, technically known as the Willis Tower. Maybe we could go with, I don't know, Town Lake versus Lady Bird Lake. There are certain things that have their names, and whatever bizarre efforts are made to get us to call those things something different, we're used to a certain thing. And by the way, the cooler name, Red River Shootout, world's largest outdoor cocktail party, or cocktail party for short, Sears Tower, Town Lake. I don't know about anybody else in the SEC, although I would assume with drinking habits in the SEC that a lot of people are resistant to calling it something other than the cocktail party. That's what we're calling it here in Austin, too. Those Georgia and Florida fans listening right now. One more thing to get to before the commercial break from SEC Media Days. This is a couple of days old now, but I do feel like it is worth our time because Greg Sankey spoke, I want to say on Monday, and he had a number of different things to say. And this was reported by Ross Dellinger on Monday. Something that really caught my eye and is extremely frustrating as we attempt to get things correct with regards to the overall direction of college sports, how college sports is compensating its athletes, and how they consider their athletes as well. And one of the biggest points of discussion, or sticking points, as it were, with regards to federal legislation, is that the NCAA and these universities want certain things, including the schools to pay the athletes directly through a rev share model, but they don't want to consider the athletes employees of the school. Those two things don't go together, in my opinion. Well, Greg Sankey was asked about collectively bargaining with athletes, which he believes would not require employment. Greg Sankey, quote, "I've not had a student athlete come to me and say, I want to be taxed like an employee." Well, maybe they don't understand the tax code, Greg. Maybe they don't understand that if they're not employees, they are independent contractors. And the taxation becomes a little bit more complicated at that point because you're not doing that work for them. It's up to them to handle that work. And oh, by the way, they may actually get taxed a little bit more as a result. Something we will get into more down the road, but I thought that note was worth sharing with you right now. All right, coming up, it is a two-segment conversation with Phil Rosenthal. He is the star of Somebody Feed Phil and a regular participant at the ATX Television Festival, which is happening this weekend. Going to talk food and more with Phil on the other side.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Bill Rosenthal is a man of many talents. He is formerly the executive producer of the Emmy-winning show Everybody Loves Raymond, and he is now a TV star in his own right as the star of the hit Netflix show Somebody Feed Phil. He's also written a book, a bestseller, called Somebody Feed Phil the Book. It is a cookbook, of course. It also talks about his travels, and he's a regular participant at the ATX Television Festival that started today and goes through the weekend. Phil is taking part in two panels on Saturday, one with his family in the morning, the other the closing night event that is a tribute to Norman Lear. You can go to atxfestival.com to find out more info or to snag tickets. And Phil is now nice enough to join me to talk about these things and more. Phil, thank you so much for the time. I know we were just discussing this prior to the segment starting, but I'm in Chicago right now, and you're a big fan of Chicago too. What do you love about Chicago?
Well, I love the look of it. I think it's the handsomest city in America.
Yeah,
I love the architecture. I take that boat tour every time I come. I think the food scene is amazing and the people are great. And there's so much art and culture. And I just love everything about it, except the winter. Can't do it.
The winter's pretty rough. The roads are not great either, but the winter is the biggest reason to not want to live in Chicago. Now, you are a regular participant at ATX Television Fest, so I'm imagining that you've been pretty blown away by what has happened to Austin in the last 10 to 15 years now. I feel like that skyline looks different each and every year. Yeah. What is it that keeps coming you back, keeps you coming back to ATX TV Fest, Phil?
I love the television festival. It's because I grew up, you know, as a TV junkie. My parents used to say, what are you going to do, get a job watching television? And the truth is that when I started writing in television, I sent them at that time, I think it was 1989, the biggest TV that was made at the time with a note on it that said, ha ha. So TV's in my blood. I'm a student of the form and I love this festival that celebrates it. Who wouldn't? And now we're in where I can't say, I don't think there's ever been a golden age of TV, but we might be in it right now.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about because television itself is able to do so much more with storytelling. TV is able to now tell stories that movies used to have to try to tell over the course of 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah.
With that, you can get a lot of things that maybe don't, I don't know if it's them trying too hard or them not being focused enough, but I tend to agree with you. We're in the golden age for a lot of different sorts of things right now. And
certainly for serialized dramas, certainly.
Absolutely. Well, like even comedies, the formula has been figured out now. And so it's up to the funniest people out there to figure out ways to still play with those lines, even though we know how jokes are supposed to be told on television. And there's many different ways to do that. And you've done a great job over that over time of making people smile, laugh, and really go through the gamut of emotions when you really start watching a lot of the shows that you do.
I can't say that Everybody Loves Raymond would have fit into this in this time. The four camera live in front of a studio audience sitcom is kind of in a fallow period right now. I hope it comes back because when it works, it's wonderful. For my attraction to it was that it was the perfect in between theater and film. You write it, rehearse it, and present it to a live audience as a play. And then it has the permanence and even the flexibility through editing of film. So that's what makes it this perfect combo.
Do you think Raymond would work as a single camera show?
It might, but I don't think it would be as much fun to make. Single camera shows are making movies every week. They're a lot harder to do. Every time you switch camera angles, you have to relight. So there's a lot of time and you're not getting the spontaneity that you get from doing it in front of a live audience. So you just don't. I also love the theatricality of it. I love the that the audience is in on the thing being performed. What I mean is a character says something and gets a laugh. This character on stage next to him has to hold for that laugh. They can't react exactly as they would in real life because people are laughing who are right off camera. And that's a wonderful thing that we're in on it. We're at a performance together and we're taking in the story together.
Very poetic. Now, if there's something you may like as much as television, it is not just eating, but it's sharing meals with people.
Well, I took everything I love about making a show and I turned it towards everything else I love in life, which is family, friends, food, travel, and laughs. So Somebody Feed Phil is a natural extension of my, I guess, personality in the way that Larry David came out from behind the camera and you got to see the guy behind that show, for better or worse. Except I would call my show, Why Curb Your Enthusiasm?
I like that. And now the podcast does the same thing, Naked Lunch, where you're
Naked Lunch with David Wild and me. We eat lunch as we have for 30 years with our friends. And I would always say, why are we taping this? These are great stories we're hearing from all our friends who are, you know, musicians and actors and work in various parts, comedians, various parts of show business. And I've always loved these lunches, and now we're taping them. That's all, because everyone else has a podcast. Why not me?
A big fan of Greg Fitzsimmons. I love that episode. That episode spends a big chunk of time just talking about Brian Wilson and how nervous he ever was going into a conversation. Do you have a most nervous that you've ever
most
been
nervous?
In a conversation since you've talked to a lot of big time people in your years?
The person I'm most nervous around, and I've met them now a few times, is Bruce Springsteen. Huh. I can't put words together because he's my idol. He's the greatest living performer of our time. And I just don't know what to, I almost like don't want to meet him anymore because I don't need, he doesn't have room in his life for me to be his friend. And that's all I really want is to be Bruce Springsteen's friend. But I know it's never really going to happen. What can I do? Make chit chat, tell him how great he is again. it's ridiculous. The first time I met him, I was introduced to him by Rob Lowe, who I don't know very well, but I was downstairs at one of his concerts. This is 25 years ago. And I'm going to meet him. Someone I know is going to introduce him to me after the concert, and I'm nervous as hell. And I'm down there waiting for my friend, and Rob Lowe sees me, and we know each other a little bit. And he says, you haven't met Bruce yet? And I said, no. And he says, come here. And I go, no. It's all, you know, it's arranged in a way, you know, that I'll be properly. And he just pulls me over to Bruce Springs and he goes, Bruce, this is my friend Phil. He created the show Everybody Loves Raymond. And Bruce Springsteen says, what's that?
You were getting to like be really proud in that moment because he's like, oh, cool. Congratulations. I love that show. And he went the opposite.
Never heard of it. And I turned to Rob as if to say, thanks, Rob. This is exactly how I wanted this to go. This thing I've been dreaming about. And to his credit, Rob, you know, explained it. And to his even greater credit, Bruce Springsteen goes, well, now I'm going to watch because I know the guy. And I just melted. And I said, it's okay, Bruce, you don't have to watch. I'll still buy your records.
Was this during the height of Raymond's popularity too?
Yes. Rob Lowe was like, well, it's a very, he turned into Woody Allen. It's a very popular show. It's a number one on CBS. Yeah.
So you and Bruce do share a credit because you have both guest starred on Curb Your Enthusiasm.
That's right. But not the same episode. No.
Not the same episode, but it
by the way, if I've ever been jealous of Larry David, that was the moment.
Oh, yeah. Well, Bruce, you know, he did the classic Larry David thing with Bruce, too. And you had your conflict with Larry, where Larry didn't necessarily want to get together with you, and he ends up wearing the MAGA hat. Brilliant storyline, as Larry is prone to do.
But thank you for reminding me of this, because now I actually do have something I can talk to Bruce about.
Oh, exactly. So that's right? That's one of my all-time favorite shows, Curb Your Enthusiasm. What was it like working on that show like you were able to?
I have to tell you that Larry David is very Larry David.
Mm.
That he is exactly like that. Like every word out of Larry's mouth in life could be an episode of that show. The first time I met him was at a party. I'm introduced to him and he does not say hello. I say, hi, nice to meet you. And Larry David says, you think it's all right to throw gum in the fireplace? That's his hello.
The answer is no to that,
thinking,
right?
He's always thinking of these things that nobody else thinks about. And yet we all may think about them. And he taps into some, I don't know, deep subconscious thing that we think about but don't say. And yet he says it.
The answer is no to throwing gum in a fireplace also.
Well, right away, that's an episode, isn't it? You throw gum in the fireplace. He throws gum in the fireplace. It plugs up the little gas line for the gas fireplace, right? And the house explodes.
Well, that's a very dark Curb Your Enthusiasm episode, but Larry is...
Well, no one has to be home.
That's fair. He is Phil Rosenthal. You know him as the executive producer of Everybody Loves Raymond and the star of Somebody Feed Phil, also author of Somebody Feed Phil, the book. And he is going to be here in Austin at the ATX TV Festival this weekend. Go to atxfestival.com to find out info about his two panels on Saturday or to maybe snag tickets. Coming up, one more segment with Phil Rosenthal here on the other side on Sports Day Plus on 102.7 ESPN.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Back for one more segment with Phil Rosenthal. He's the former executive producer of Everybody Loves Raymond and the star of Somebody Feed Phil on Netflix. Also wrote the book, Somebody Feed Phil, the book. And he is taking part, as he does pretty much every year, in the ATX TV Festival this weekend. It started today, goes through Sunday. Phil is a part of a couple of panels on Saturday. You can go to atxfestival.com to find out more info or to maybe snag tickets. And Phil, considering that you're such a big proponent of people sharing meals, what do you think of phones at the table?
Wow, you're all over the place with your questions. I like it. Phones at the table? You know, if a message comes in and you got to look at it, okay, but don't be there the whole time on your phone. That's rude. But I think it's such a part of us now. Listen, I'm an addict like everybody else.
Yeah.
If my thing dinged right now in the middle of a nice interview with you, I would have to have a look at it because my whole world is here. It's my office. We travel with our office. The Terminator, by the way, is not Arnold Schwarzenegger coming back in time. It's here. This is the Terminator. We're already half human, half phone. This is going to kill us all. Mark my words.
So in the inevitable war between man and machine,
you are already winning.
Yeah.
We're already controlled by it.
Yeah, the sad thing is technology doesn't even have to fire a bullet. It just has to get us bickering about what color a dress is on social media.
Yes, and, you know, look at it. Look, we spend our time in our own worlds of we believe, right?
Yeah.
We never have to take in the other side. My whole reason for being feels like I must get you to sit down and eat together. I did it in our Washington, D.C. episode, and it was not easy to get a Republican and a Democrat to sit and have lunch together with me. And I got two great guys. I got Brian Fitzpatrick, a Republican from Pennsylvania, and the great Pete Buttigieg, our Secretary of Transportation, who's a Democrat. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that they were on something already called the Bipartisanship Committee, which, have you heard of this? I never heard of it. I didn't know it existed. They may be the only two guys. I don't know who else is on the committee. But when I asked them, what do you think the biggest problem in our country is today? They said bipartisanship, which makes total sense because nothing else will be solved gun control, climate, you know, poverty. Nothing will be solved without us working together, bipartisanship. So my idea is put a buffet in Congress. Maybe they'll talk to each other while they're eating. Maybe they won't want to kill each other because the food is good. It's not that crazy.
Food is one of the keys to bringing us together. And by the way, civic debate is something that used to be much more common decades ago. It's only seemingly in the last 10 to 15 years that that started to fall by the wayside. But it does seem like level-headed people are starting to come to the conclusion that that sort of thing needs to happen again, that we can talk about our differences without it devolving into name calling. And maybe,
you know, that the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence even was not written in Independence Hall in Philadelphia. It was mostly written over drinks and food in the bar restaurant around the corner that's still there and still operation. Yes, because the first thing we are is human beings. What do human beings do? One of the things we do, no matter where you live, you got to eat. So it humanizes us. It makes it relatable. When I travel, I can be with someone who doesn't speak a word of English, right? But I can make myself understood by going, oh, yes, good, yes, right? And we're communicating on a level, on the most basic human level, food, good. Yep. And then if we can share a smile or a laugh, sometimes over that food, or the way how much we like it or don't like it, now we're friends. So I always say food is the great connector, and then laughs are the cement.
Great saying. Boy, you're full of those great sayings, t-shirt sayings. I feel like you could have a t-shirt company in a different life, Phil.
Well, I have my books, right? I have the cookbook, the Somebody Feed Phil the book.
That's right.
And I have a kid's book with my daughter, and I have I'm working on it right now. In fact, I took a break to talk to you for the second cookbook.
Oh, really? Is there a general theme to that one?
It's not confined to the show. It's all my favorite dishes in the world that I've found over the years, including stuff from friends and family.
Is there a dish that you find yourself most surprised that you love so much all these years later?
It's a good question. I'm always surprised when anything is so fantastic, you know, that I can't stop thinking about, like new favorites that I find. Shola Olanloyo is his name. He's a Nigerian chef. He lives in Philadelphia. And we filmed with him, and he took me to his little townhouse in Philly. And he has a backyard that's maybe 15 feet by 15 feet. That's it. But he's got like three grills going back there, including a super hot oven. And he made steak in this thing, and he made squid. And it was so hot that we could film the entire cooking process in real time. That's how fast it was.
Wow. Like
he puts it in, shuts it, talks to me for 30 seconds, opens it. That squid is done. Drizzles it with olive oil, a little sea salt. Boom, one of the most delicious things you ever ate. So yes, that's a surprise. Right? Very happy surprise. Listen, I've had some bad surprises too, but they're not in the book.
So are there dishes or places that you make sure you have to visit when you come to Austin?
Yes, Leroy and Lewis. I think it's one of the best barbecue places in the world. I really do. It's in our Austin episode. I've been to Franklin number of times. It's amazing, fantastic. I think Leroy and Lewis and Interstellar and a few of the other places are equally good. They're a little different. Maybe they have their specialties, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if somebody gives you Leroy and Lewis, a platter of Leroy and Lewis and everything they make, you're going to complain that it's not Franklin? No, you're going to be too happy eating. I also love Suerte. I don't miss that when I come. You know what my first stop is on every trip to Austin? Torchy's.
Okay.
I love it.
There's one other thing that you're doing for ATX TV Fest this year, and it's the closing night event that is a tribute to the great Norman Lear.
Yes.
You're going to take part in a script reading from Mods, and then talk about Norman afterwards. Did you have the pleasure of garnering any sort of friendship or relationship with Norman prior to his passing?
Oh my God, yeah. When I was in the middle of season one on Everybody Loves Raymond, my phone rang in the writer's room. It was Norman Lear. And I answered the phone, hello? And he goes, I hear we're fans of each other. And I said, I don't know about you, but I'm a big fan of yours. You know, my whole life was influenced by Norman Lear and watching All in the Family. And he said, we should have lunch. Can you meet me at Pinot tomorrow on Ventura Boulevard? And if it's okay with you, there's someone else here who likes you, who wants to come along. I said, bring in whoever you want, Norman Lear. And I go to Pinot the next day, and Norman is sitting there with Carl Reiner. Yes, and I dropped dead, yes. And I couldn't believe how nice they were to me. They didn't have to be nice to me, I was a young kid. But they were so sweet. They felt like my old Jewish uncles. And they treated me like family, and then we became family. And we became very close friends.
Yeah, you were a Mel Brooks appearance away from your world coming to an end that day.
Hey, I got to know him through them as well. I got to have lunches with these guys, my heroes. Not just Norman, Carl, Larry Gelbart, who wrote MASH and a lot of great things. He was super funny. Not enough people know who Larry Gelbart is. He wrote Tootsie. He was a funny thing happened on the way to the farm. MASH, the series, obviously. But him, Mel Brooks, Neil Simon would come to lunch. I mean, I started orchestrating these lunches so I could hang out with them.
All right, last question now, Phil. What do you love about sharing meals with people?
It's the great connector. It's like I said, it's so fun. It's my entire social life, really. If you and I are going to be friends, we're going to have to eat. That's just it. I mean, that's where the talking gets done. I wouldn't have a meeting with you, unless it was, I guess, a hard business meeting. But I'm not going to meet you socially unless we're eating or drinking something. That's just how the world works in my world.
Sure.
And we have focus. We're not on our phones. We're doing this thing that's enjoyable, hopefully. And we're talking and we're getting the stories. It's all about connecting to other human beings. Food is the great connector, and then laughs are the cement.
Yes, they are. And you've been proving that for a long time. And I do appreciate that as well as the time today. He is Phil Rosenthal. Check him out at the ATX TV Festival this weekend. Go to atxfestival.com to find out more info, to snag tickets or his event.
Well, Saturday morning, not to interrupt you, but yeah. Saturday morning is a panel with me about Somebody Feed Phil. And my special guests are my kids, Ben and Lily, who are in the show with me quite frequently. And my nemesis is going to be there. My brother, the producer of the show, Richard.
And that's Saturday morning. And the yes. Norman Lear event is Saturday night. Phil, thank you so much for joining me once again. It's been a real pleasure, man.
It's my pleasure, Trey.
Coming up in Where Are We At in Society, there is good naked and there is bad naked. And unfortunately, I have a story of the latter to bring you and a new airline that is catering to dogs. We'll discuss here on Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. I'm Trey Elling on 1027 ESPN and 1027ESPN.com.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling. It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elling.
Final segment of the show means it's time for
Where Are We At in Society Today?
That's right. It is your regular look at stories that show we as a people are headed in the wrong direction. Very occasionally, I will bring you a story that provides a sense of optimism that has us all saying to ourselves, hey, maybe we as a people are starting to figure something out, but sadly, today is not that day. And we start in Italy for today's Where Are We At story. As you may have heard me promote by now a couple of times at the beginning and at the end of last segment, there is such a thing as good naked, and there is also such a thing as bad naked. I would argue, perhaps counterintuitive, that there is more bad naked than there is good naked. Especially when you're talking about the grotesque male figure. Don't get me wrong, the female figure can be grotesque too, but even at its best, what's happening with most guys when they're naked is still pretty disgusting. I think we can all agree to that. Whether you're talking about men or women, this next story is sadly an example of more bad naked than good. A beach in Italy, technically halfway up Sardinia's west coast, has decided to allow people to get married on its nudist beach. Venice Beach looks to become a destination for naturalist weddings after the local authorities opted to let couples say their vows in the nude. Luigi Tedeschi, which is a very Italian name, so it shouldn't surprise you that he is the mayor of the town where this beach is, San Vero Miles, said the authorities got the idea when a German couple wrote to ask whether it would be possible to marry on the beach, which has had a naturist designation area for a couple of years. Of course it was a German couple that asked this question. There was an outside chance it was going to be an Italian couple, but the freaky deaky German couples are the freakiest of the lot. Now, most of you are probably laughing like I did when I first saw this story at the ridiculousness of people standing there naked with their crowd also naked exchanging vows. But Mayor Luigi, who was the reason why this beach became nudist to begin with, said that the reason to open up for weddings was more serious. Quote, "I think we're living in a delicate moment for people's freedom with the nationalist movements in Europe. People protest and get rounded up by the police or they're intimidated. So I think we need to do some things to show that people are free. Most people want freedom, not a regime." It's very tempted to try the old Italian accent with that quote. I'm kind of glad I didn't now. Maybe I should have gone with that. That was a very serious quote there. "I think we are living in a delicate moment for people's freedom with the nationalist movements in Europa." No, that doesn't work. So, Luigi is a self-declared anti-fascist who's been the mayor since 2015. I guess you have to claim anti-fascism if you're in the land of Mussolini. He did tell CNN that the central part of East Venice Beach had always been frequented by nudists, so he just made it official. It's not like he went out on a limb here. But he says, look, people can scoff at this all they want to, but, quote, "nudity has nothing to do with sex. For naturists, it's a philosophy of life, and it's linked to nature. It should be respected. So why not? We have this beach, a place that lends itself brilliantly to naturism, and then we thought, let's make a beach for weddings. If people want to marry nude, they can." He said that the central part of this four-mile beach, which is flanked by two regular clothed areas, is partially hidden. If anyone has a problem, they can walk on past or look at the sea. Yet Tedeschi said that nobody in the town, who has 2,500 people in the off-season but up to 30,000 visiting each summer, nobody has complained. "There's been a few jokes about whether I'd have to be clothed to officiate ceremonies or where I'd wear the fascia, the mayoral sash. but they're just jokes. Fundamentally, everyone is in favor. Now, I do have to say that who's conducting the ceremony, that's not a joking question. That's serious. You're at a nudist beach. It's a nudist wedding. The pastor or the person conducting the wedding probably needs to be naked too. That should be a rule, right? This is very basic stuff we're talking about here. You're at a nudist beach. You need to be naked. You go to a nudist beach wedding, a nude wedding. You got to be naked too in the crowd. Sorry. We're not making exceptions for you. This is about freedom here. You are only as free as you can comfortably be in your own birthday suit. The idea, according to Mayor Luigi, is also to help increase tourism sustainably. We have to have a cultural exchange, not big hotels, but small accommodation offerings that tell the story of the area. That can only happen if I greet the tourist in my home, feed them something I made, and this kind of tourism, naturism, is perfect for that. They are more in touch with nature. So there you go. Naked wedding. Boy, that's really going to test the limits of a friendship, isn't it? Not just having to travel to Italy to watch somebody get married, but to be told, hey, we're doing this on a nudist beach. We're going to want you to be in your birthday suit as well. What's the dress? The dress is birthday suit formal. I don't know if I have a friend alive that I'm doing that for. And yes, it does have more to say about me than it does any friendship that I may be thinking about right now. And I know what some of you are thinking. I don't have many friends. You're not wrong about that. But the ones that I do have, well, I value my own self-respect more than I do going to some silly ceremony where we all have to get naked. If you're like me, you have noticed in the last few years that people bringing their dogs everywhere has gotten out of control. I've actually seen businesses start to push back on this now, posting signs in doorways saying, I'm sorry, but your dog is not allowed in here unless it is an official service dog. By the way, emotional support pet dogs don't count. Most of the times we know that is people who just want to bring their dogs everywhere. And so they say it's an emotional support pet. Sorry, tie Fido up outside. While many businesses are pushing back on this, I think airlines are hard-pressed to do so. Considering that I am in Chicago right now, was in an airport or a couple of airports recently, and I saw a fair number of dogs on leashes in the airport. Only a couple of whom had that official service dog vest on. But there is an airline that is leaning hard into the idea that people want to bring their pets on vacation and get a doctor's note to allow them not have to pay to put the pooch up while they're gone for a long weekend, or maybe it's a week plus. The new airline is called Bark Air. It's putting dogs before their human companions. Its first flight was last week, I believe. Yeah, last week, a maiden voyage was sold out and departed New York for L.A. at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Bark is a pet company founded in 2011 that sells dog food and other products. It announced the new aviation experience for canines in April. It's the second air travel service to market itself as catering to pets before human passengers, recognizing how stressful and uncomfortable commercial air travel can be for animals. You think it's uncomfortable for the animals? Imagine the people sitting around the wackadoo that has the dog on the plane with them. But I realize what they're talking about here. They're talking about dogs that get stowed underneath with the luggage. UK-based public charter operator Canine Jets also let passengers' pets travel next to them in the aircraft cabin versus in crates and commercial aircraft cargo holds. From Bark co-founder and CEO Matt Meeker, we're excited to take the insights we've learned over the years to create an experience that is truly dog first, which is drastically different from just accepting dogs from the ground to the skies. We believe this initiative will elevate awareness of our brand's mission and values, introduce more dog lovers to the Bark family, and help enrich the lives of dogs and their people around the world. So what makes it so special for dogs other than being able to sit in a seat next to their owners? Bark Air is offering white paw service. Yeah, I'm cringing at that as well. To its canine customers. Each dog ticket comes with one pass for a human. Families may also purchase additional passes. Children under the age of 18 are not allowed aboard. There is no size or breed restriction for dogs. But the service does not come cheap. A one-way flight from New York to LA coming up in June costs $6,000 for one dog and one human. A New York to London ticket cost $8,000. And there's the hook. They're just finding ways to milk these suckers. These fools were already jumping through all sorts of hoops of their own to bring dogs on board. They're just trying to gouge them one more time. And that is it for another edition of Sports Day Plus. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'll be back tomorrow at 6. In the meantime, have yourselves a great rest of the evening and hook 'em.
It's Sports Day Plus with Trey Elliott.